Hi, everyone, and welcome to Stoppage Time on a Tuesday. Tuesday show this week because Jason and I will be in Toronto tomorrow. Tuesday show next week as well because Jason and I will be in Chicago. You know Jason Longshore and Jimmy Vance. I'm Mike Conti, the fatter, uglier version of Kelly Francis. I want to thank Kelly for filling in last week. Did a great job. A lot of fun watching the World Cup discussion. We're going to get into that a bunch today, believe me. There's a lot to unpack. In fact, we'll probably start with that today. But go ahead and start sending us your questions at the bottom of your screen. We already have some on Twitter. We are going to talk about Atlanta United returning to MLS action tomorrow up in Toronto. But a lot of other things going on around the world, a lot of fun things. Want to remind you that Stoppage Time is brought to you by Aaron's. Easy, beautiful, affordable, top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best? Well, that doesn't matter. Shop Aarons.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. Want to start with the World Cup, I think?
Do I need to get the IFAB app pulled up?
The IFAB app.
Yes. If you're going to talk about the World Cup these days, folks, you have to have the Laws of the Game app ready to go at all times.
Well,
at all times. Because that's all we talk about anymore.
All right, let's start with this. The refereeing at this World Cup and the use of VAR, acceptable or not acceptable, in your opinion?
Well, let's take the full picture because we have to be fair about it. Mid-March is when it was approved that VAR would be part of this World Cup.
And we were clamoring for it, by the way.
And we should have been. Mid-March is when it was finally approved. The Men's World Cup last year had a full year of prep as you saw VAR rolled out in leagues in 2017. In MLS, it came in mid-season in 2017, in that calendar year that FIFA operates on. That's when it started. You had a full year prep. You had many referees who were used to using VAR, who had been video assistant referees, had been assistant VARs. Women's game, no league in the world uses it. Mm-hmm. This is the first competition it's ever been in, so you have to start there. Mm-hmm. It's been... Honestly, I don't think it's been as bad as has been portrayed. I think the video assistant referee part of it has generally been pretty good. It's been the laws of the game and some of the tweaks that are new in this competition that are grabbing the headlines.
Yeah, and the one that is really sticking out is the encroachment on penalty kicks. Mm-hmm. Which, I get why there's been some confusion. Mm-hmm. I guess it was a common sense move to remove the cautionary aspect where you don't get a yellow now if you
The shootout.
In the shootout.
Not in regulation.
Right.
And that's a key distinction. And I think they got that right, ultimately, because we hadn't had shootouts. Because you had accumulation, you couldn't change it completely. Mm-hmm. Because then referees who had given yellow cards for it during regulation in the group stage, those yellow cards were still in the books. You're not going to wipe them out. It's all kinds of complicated.
Well, I mean, look... We've known for years, and we've seen it in MLS matches that we call, that you're not, as a goalkeeper, you're not allowed to encroach on a penalty. Mm-hmm. So why has this been such a jarring change, adjustment, that has created such an uproar in this Women's World Cup?
Video replay.
Because now they're looking for
of it. It's not a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Yeah, you got to have both feet on the line. Don't come off too far. Mm-hmm. We never knew where that line was.
True.
How often had you seen in MLS a referee and a call that back where a goalkeeper came off their line?
I have not seen it in an Atlanta United match.
I remember a playoff game in 2012 where goalkeeper saved. It was Joe Willis, who's with Houston now. He came on for Bill Hamid, who'd been red carded, saved a penalty. They actually called the encroachment, which is even more rare, into the area. And they retook the kick in a playoff game out of nowhere. Is that what we want? Do we want to go back to where we don't know where the line is? Now we know where the line is.
Right.
It is absolutely defined, and it's black and white, but that takes some getting used to.
The one thing that Christina Uncle has been saying a lot on the Fox broadcast, and in general I agree with her, but I think this is even a fuzzy line too, is you don't want to have VAR re-referee the game.
And no, I don't.
I understand the common sense behind that, but I think that might be a little bit too broad of a statement.
Yeah, that hasn't been happening so much. Like, we had this conversation. When VAR in 2017 and 2018, the first full year it was in MLS, it was different than it is now. I think it was very different than it is now. Mm-hmm. Now, we're not having that conversation, really. we're not having the re-referee thing. I went back to read, and it made my head hurt, the whole discussion from a referee perspective of the Joseph Martinez offside, not offside, deliberate play, not deliberate play. And that was even trickier than we knew at the time, because you had different referee organizations from different parts of the world that would define that play differently.
Right.
So
we're talking about the goal that was pulled back against Sporting Kansas City in May of last year. Mark Geiger was the center ref.
Yep.
And VAR overturned the goal. And then Mark Geiger was asked about it after the match and said that the ball bounced into the defender.
So the defender planted his leg.
The defender planted his leg and the ball played the defender, which we both believed at the time to be kind of a cop-out in twisting it to mean that the defender did not deliberately play the ball.
Right. But it was very clunky, and Howard Webb backed him. And I think Howard Webb had to back him at that point because he's going to the World Cup and all that. We're not getting those incidents in MLS anymore, though. We're not getting to that degree of is it, we're not really sure, let's look at it for 5 minutes. I think you found the line. Now, in this competition, you have referees who haven't worked together. You have center referees who have very little, if any, experience with VAR practically, not in a training situation, practically. And it's a new toy.
Mm-hmm.
I think at times it's been a little bit of, okay, let's take a look at this. Okay, let's take a look at this. It's gotten better in the knockout rounds, I think. I think the biggest miss by a video assistant referee was in the United States game yesterday, because they asked for the second penalty for an on-field review. The referee looked at it, and if it's going to an on-field review, the video assistant referee feels like there is a clear and obvious error that took place in the call.
Which there was not. In my opinion, I don't think there was either,
but according to the referee, which is the most important person, that was a waste of time.
Let's get into that for a moment. The second penalty that Rapino scored to give the USA the 2-1 lead, and that stood as the game-winning goal. You had a foul in the penalty area. It was at best a clumsy challenge, where a Spanish player comes in with a bouncing ball in the area, comes in leading with her studs, above or at the knee, if not slightly above it, makes contact, maybe glancing contact, we don't know, but it's still contact with an American player in the box. American player goes down, they call the penalty. A lot of people on Twitter were saying when it was called and immediately after the match that they did not believe that was a penalty. To me, if that happens in the midfield, it's a foul.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the case, why isn't it a penalty if it happens in the box?
It's a judgment call. And this is the conversation we always have, and this is what's never going to change. That's why I think a lot of the, oh no, VAR's ruining my game conversation is silly. We're always going to discuss these judgment calls, because I've had people from all around the world throw at me, well, that foul doesn't get called 1,000 times. Like, well, it does get called 1,000 times.
Right.
I mean, it's a judgment. Does Rose Lavelle go down easily at the end of it? Yes. And she should, because she's trying to get a penalty after contact in the 18.
Yeah.
She absolutely should go down.
I would also say it is easy to go down when you take studs to the knee.
Mm-hmm. There was an extra step, and it probably knocked her off balance, and she went down when she felt the contact.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. All that's fine. It's a call, and when you go back to the VAR mechanism of it, and this is where I don't like when VAR encroaches. Was there a clear and obvious error in that situation? No. The only reason I think a replay, an on-field review should have happened, it's going to get checked. It's always going to get checked. And we're going to try to be consistent with our language as I feel like I've had a referee crash course over the last month. A check is what's happening in the booth, and that happens all the time. Any penalty, any goal, it's going to get checked. You don't have to delay time. You don't have to waste time, any of that. A review is when the referee goes to a monitor. And in this case, there was no reason to, because it was a judgment call. She had every angle at it. There's not something she missed. She wasn't blocked with her line of sight. Like, all of it was clear. If the VAR disagrees with the call, that's not what they're there for. That would be the re-refereeing to me.
Well, we're almost to the quarterfinals now. The round of 16 is basically ending as we speak. They'll play one more round of 16 match within the next hour, and then we'll be down to the last eight. This has been a great tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I think Sunday and yesterday, you had two matches France-Brazil and United States-Spain that if you were to put a blindfold on or cut off ponytails, you would think it was a men's match. I mean, just extremely high-quality soccer.
Can I be a hipster for a minute and throw one more?
Go right ahead.
Australia-Norway.
Yes.
Game of the tournament.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Game of the tournament.
From a drama standpoint, completely. And Australia being out at this point might be one of the bigger surprises of the mm-hmm. tournament. But you've had some really fantastic high-quality matches, especially here in the knockout phase. It's been a great tournament, but do you think now the United States is still the favorite to win this World Cup?
Nope. I didn't think they were the favorite coming in. I think France was the favorite coming in. They've come back to the pack a little bit. I think England and Germany have the best path to the final. Mm-hmm. When you look at the path for both of those teams, and England had a lot of different kind of drama in their match with Cameroon.
Yeah, well, we can talk about that, too. I watched that from start to finish. It's a sad situation for Cameroon mm-hmm. because it had to feel like kind of an avalanche for them, the way that the rulings were going. But all three of the controversial calls were correct. That is a back pass mm-hmm. in the box. It should have been an indirect kick. It mm-hmm. looks weird coming from the edge of the six-yard box.
She played it, and then she shielded it. That means she was playing it to the keeper.
If Cameroon wants to argue that there was a player off on the second goal, I guess they could, but that player was not even remotely involved in the play.
Not in any way involved. That's an easy goal, and that's a mistake by the AR for putting the flag up.
Yes, and then the goal scored by Cameroon that was pulled back, as we have seen in an Atlanta United match this year, clear and obvious does not matter when it comes to offside. If video can conclusively prove that it's even by the length of the hair that you're offside, it's going to be brought back.
Technically, if video can show something, then it's clear and obvious that it was wrong. And that's the way you get around it. It's a serious missed incident. It's clearly and obviously wrong because there's proof, and it's black and white.
But Cameroon was obviously very emotional. Mm-hmm. You know, they made suggestions of bias, which I think are unfortunate. If you're watching the same match I'm watching, I thought the referee from China applied a lot of common sense, mm-hmm. could have thrown a yellow or two for dissent at the end of the first half. The foul at the very end of the match
red card.
Was a straight red 100 times out of 100. She throws a yellow after VAR. There was really no point to throw a red. The match was
still
over.
Still, you got to throw a red.
I'm with you.
At that point, she's trying to get out of there with no incident. I understand that tactic. I completely understand it. But
the one thing that foul. The one thing that stood out to me about England, and this is something that Kendra was mentioning on the broadcast, was Fran Kirby was not really seeing the ball a lot. And I don't know if that was tactical by Cameroon or if England was just kind of out of shape. England really let down at the beginning of the second half mm-hmm. of that match. But and Cameroon was starting to pick them apart.
But let's get into that. I mean, you just had, if you're England, and Phil Neville talked about it, and a lot of people had a lot of issues with what Phil Neville had to say. I think they're missing some of the key elements that he had to say. One was that his team was out of sorts in the locker room at halftime because they just saw what happened. They just had a goal that was eventually ruled good. They saw a team say, basically, we're not going to play. Mm-hmm. Nobody goes through that. That's not something you train for. That will throw
not
you off.
Not a world tournament.
No. Then, early in the second half, you have the situation with Cameroon getting the goal that is then called back, and you have another bad back pass that your goalkeeper has to bail you out on. Mm-hmm. After that, I think England was able to settle down. They get the third goal, and then it's just seeing it out. But as much as Cameroon was out of sorts, feeling like the calls were going against them, I think it took England out of their game. Mm-hmm. And I think it affected England's performance. But when you look at their road the rest of the way, they had, I think, emotional stress in this game. They didn't have to exert themselves in a heavy way in this match. They get Norway in the quarterfinals. That's a much better matchup than France. Well, than Australia, but also than France has against the United States or the United States has against France.
No doubt.
England has that type of path. Germany has that path on the other side. Netherlands, who's about to play at 3 o'clock, could be the one that might step up and challenge Germany. But England and Germany have the easiest paths in the bracket. And France having to go through Brazil, then having to get through the United States, the U.S. having to go through Spain, which was a really difficult match, and then having to get through France, either one, that's going to take a lot out of you. England won't have as much of a difficult path as the winner of France-US.
So if Holland wins, correct me if I'm wrong, that's seven teams from Europe and one North American team in the last eight, which is interesting. Still no South American teams have made it to the last eight. You won't have a team from Asia unless Japan.
Right, which is possible. They beat them at 15.
You never know. Wins coming up against Holland. Let's go back to USA and France now. I had so many mixed emotions watching the Americans play yesterday. Because I do think you have to tip your cap to Spain.
You better.
When they got the equalizer, it allowed them to do what the Red Bulls did a couple weeks ago. Play a line of four, another bank of four, and start fouling and really chop the game up. And, you know, maybe, hopefully for them, get to an extra time and then penalty situation where anything can happen. The USA, to their credit, found a way to draw that penalty, controversial or not. And they end up winning the game. I know a lot of people believe the USA did not play very well yesterday. Nope. I wouldn't go that far. I do think Jill Ellis erred in not making substitutions fast enough. It looked like some players were running out of gas. But I just thought that was, and you had tweeted, it was a very even match. It was a good match.
It was a great match.
I don't think the USA can beat France playing like that. No. But I think they can beat pretty much anyone else in the world playing like that.
They can't beat Germany or England playing like that either. And the Dutch would give them a game playing like that. Spain doesn't have enough firepower. And that was the biggest issue. I don't think they were playing for extra time and penalties. I think what Spain did was really intelligent. Because they couldn't run with the United States. Mm-hmm. So they did get numbers behind the ball, but not to bunker or just counter. It was get numbers behind the ball, win the ball, and then play your game. So they had pockets of possession in the match, not dominant possession, which is their game. That's a tough adjustment to make. And they, I thought their manager and their players were outstanding in this tactically. Mm-hmm. Could the referee have given more yellow cards for persistent infringement? Yes. And I think that was probably the biggest mistake the referee made. Alex Morgan was targeted, and it was smart. If the referees are going to allow you to do it, that's how you play it. It worked. Carly Lloyd should have come on for Morgan in about the 60th minute, 55th, 60th minute. That's the sub I would have made to change it. Before you get the penalty, which was a little bit against the run of play, mm-hmm. you get that opportunity, and then it's just seeing the game out.
Will France play the same way on Friday? As Spain?
France can run and run past the United States. That was the biggest difference. I think team speed, the U.S. had a decided advantage here. So France can run with the United States. They're not going to be afraid of the U.S. and try to sit at all. Will they play for set pieces at times? Yes. France is the best team in this tournament on set pieces, better than the U.S. Will they maybe be a little more defensive than an England or a Germany or a Holland would be? Yeah, I think so. I think it's just the way this team is built. But the U.S. has to be sharper, and if it's not on for Rapinoe and Heath out wide, because that's the two creative players, it's got to be Horan or Lavelle or Mewis centrally to drive this team forward. And we didn't see enough of that in the Spain match.
It's been a great tournament. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. And by this time next week, and again, we'll have a Tuesday show next week, we'll know what the semifinal looks like.
We're getting ready for a semifinal.
One of them will be played at about this time, 3 o'clock Atlanta time, a week from today. So we'll have plenty more discussion about the Women's World Cup. Next week, we are going to get into Gold Cup. We are going to get into Copa America. Before we do, though, I want to get to a couple questions. And those, of course, are brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TakeSimpleSteps.com. I don't know if we have any Women's World Cup questions.
We do.
Oh, good. Okay, well, let's get to those first.
Excellent.
We are also going to talk about Atlanta United, I promise, but we wanted to get to the international step first.
Jacob on Facebook said, which player do you see being the difference maker for both United States and France teams getting to the semifinals and why?
For France, it's Henri. I think she stepped up and had the goal on the set piece. Not from the run of play. She's not been as dominant as we expected. She's going to have a bigger role for France to get through. And I think for the U.S., it's going to be one of those central midfielders. And I don't know which two it's going to be in front of Julie Ertz. And that's been, I think, the ongoing question is Samantha Mewis a starter in this team? Lindsey Horan did not start against Spain. She was on a yellow card. Maybe that factored into it. Rose Lavelle has been outstanding in this tournament. Lavelle is the most natural attacker of the group. Mewis and Horan are both more box-to-box. I think Horan's a better attacker than Mewis. I think you need Mewis in there against France with their challenge. You need a little more defensive work in the middle of the field. So Horan or Lavelle, whichever one it is, it's easier, I think, to game plan for creativity out wide than it is centrally if you have both. if they take away Heath and Rapinoe, and they, you know, Spain took away Rapinoe after about the 15th minute. She didn't really create much from the run of play. So if France does that, it's going to have to be Horan or Lavelle stepping up in the middle of the park.
I worry about France on the set pieces.
Yeah, that's what always scares me.
And that's where someone like Becky Sauerbrunn comes into effect.
Ertz. I mean, Ertz and Wendy Renard are going to have a battle.
Yeah.
On set pieces, those two are going to have an absolute battle.
And Renard probably, what, 3 or 4 inches on Ertz at least?
At least.
So it's going to be incumbent on the U.S. Women's National Team to try to limit those set pieces as much as possible. It's important. You're never going to completely avoid
you
want to try to limit it as much as possible. I would say this is going to, it feels to me like it's going to be a low-scoring match. I don't know if we're going to have a goal in the run of play.
The U.S. hasn't scored a goal from the run of play since the first goal against Chile.
Right.
The Tobin Heath goal that was ruled an own goal. Technically, own goals are not from the run of play because it's not a shot on goal. So that one's iffy for me. I kind of thought it was on goal. But anyway, you have won since the Chile match.
Yeah.
It's just you're not producing from the run of play right now.
But you're winning.
Yeah.
And that's
surviving
the advance. And that's the thing. A lot of people said that was an ugly 2-1 win yesterday.
I don't think so.
It was an even game. Yeah. I think we're in that mindset where, and it's not an accurate mindset, people think that the USA should just be plowing over everyone
not
in this
Spain.
Tournament. That's not the case.
Spain.
Not Spain, not France, not England, not Germany, potentially not Holland. I mean,
top 8 or so. It's really, I feel like you've got the U.S., France, Germany, England, that are a cut above.
Mm-hmm.
They're the A group. And you have a group behind that. Spain, who is at the top of the next group for me. Holland, who could jump Spain with a good performance, get into a semi. Then you've got your Norways and Swedens that are right there. They can beat the top teams anytime.
Even Canada that did not get out of the round.
And Canada's probably towards the bottom of that next group.
Yeah. So
it's a lot of competition. Spain, their federation's investing over $20 million in the next season in both the national teams and on the club side. Real Madrid just started a women's team, just bought an independent project that had got to the first division. They're not going to sit back and be meek and not spend money. Barcelona's spending $4.5 million a year on their women's team. Yeah. What do you think Real Madrid's going to spend?
It's not charity.
No. That Spanish
Real Madrid
program
are not
is growing.
Doing it out of charity.
Big time.
Big time.
See, John Nason on Facebook said there needs to be a time limit on how much to study these VAR calls.
Interesting.
Both in the booth and on the field, there has to be a point where you just don't know and you have to stick to what it's called.
Yeah, I think a lot of people forget when the NFL went to instant replay, the second, which is the current version of it, in 1999, it was supposed to be a 90-second limit, and then the monitor would turn off and quietly, that went away. Very quietly. It's tough to put a fixed number on how long a check should take.
If you're waiting for an angle, if you're having a problem with processing or something like that.
Not all checks are made the same.
No, they're not.
So I agree with, who said it, John?
John.
I agree with you, John, in principle.
Yes.
But I don't think there is a magic bullet solution to that.
I don't know how you write a rule on it. That's where I'm at with it. Like, yes, it should be short, but what do you time it at and how do you write the rule? I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, Copa America, they're dealing with bad equipment. Like, Copa America, the situations are taking longer because it's taking longer to get the replays and it's taking longer to chop it up and it's taking longer to send it down.
That Paraguay-Argentina handball, it was like,
you know what they need to do? They need to go to, where was it, Dubai, where Venezuela played Iran in that friendly, and they used the
kiosk.
Delta check-in kiosk.
Yes.
I'm not joking. It was literally an airline check-in kiosk pitch side for the VAR.
Hey, either that or Microsoft or Apple. Get on it with the tablets like they do for the NFL now.
But this is part of the game. We've seen this in the college football game a lot where, and it's been very frustrating to fans of some schools where replay equipment will go down in the midst of a game.
Yep.
You're watching the TV broadcast where they have a clear and obvious replay that proves the call was incorrect, but because the replay equipment has malfunctioned in the stadium, they have to go with what's called on the field.
I believe it was the African Champions League that had an issue with that in the final.
They had to replay, didn't they,
well,
because of
the
it?
Well, the team walked off.
Right. But then they replayed the match because of the walk-off.
I think so. I think that's how it ended up happening. There's been so much going on, I can't remember the ruling on that one.
Do we have any other Women's World Cup questions? If not, we'll
kind
move
of,
on.
Yes. Okay. Chris on Facebook says, question on Atlanta and the women's game. What would you say the chances are that Atlanta would be ready to announce or already have in place an NWSL franchise by the time of 2023?
Would they be on the field by 2023? I'd say that's a pretty safe. That's a safe one. I would probably lean yes on that. I don't know. I don't know for sure. Yeah. But 4 years, could you do it? Oh, easily.
The league's got to get, I think, just a tiny bit more solid before Arthur Blank wants to dip his toe in this
water. But
lottery.
I can also see the selling point being you can make us more solid.
That's true.
And that's where I think the league is right now. When you're looking at Sam Kerr potentially going to Chelsea for a million-pound deal, NWSL's got to get aggressive.
It's scary because, I mean, let's go back to Real Madrid and Barca. You mentioned Chelsea. Some of these European super clubs right now are starting to take women's football very, very seriously. And I would hate to see things get to the point where the NWSL is going to lose players to Europe.
It's going to happen.
Even American-born players.
It's going to happen in this window. If you're Real Madrid, you go sign Tobin Heath tomorrow. That's who you build around.
Yeah.
That's an exciting player to build your brand around. That's what you do straight up. This window, the transfer window that's coming up, it's going to apply to the women's leagues as well. You're going to see NWSL players in the market in July.
I think, without saying too much, I would feel comfortable in saying that it is very much on Atlanta United's radar.
Yeah, it'd be foolish not to.
I don't think that's saying anything that shouldn't be said. No. It is on Atlanta United's radar.
They'd be foolish not to at this point. When you look at what Portland and Real Salt Lake have done with it, and even where Houston and Orlando, I don't think, have fully tapped into it, it accentuates everything that Atlanta United has been. Mm-hmm. It would be a no-brainer if everything is in the right place with the league and you're ready to do it. It feels like a no-brainer, and I think it would be very, very successful.
Okay, we'll take more questions later in the show. I want to remind you that Stoppage Time is brought to you by Aaron's. Easy, beautiful, affordable top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best. Don't worry about that. They can help you out. Shop Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. Gold Cup. When Atlanta United plays tomorrow night, the U.S. men's national team will also be playing somewhat meaningless match. They're through to the knockout stage, but you really want to see them build off what they did Saturday with that 6-0 win over Trinidad and Tobago. A little bit of a slow start, then they really, really came on. How do you assess where the U.S. men's national team is after two matches?
Good progress. I mean, it's progress. It's a step in the right direction. Is everything fixed? No. You haven't played the greatest of opponents yet. Trinidad and Tobago is definitely a step up from Guyana, and I think the performance was better, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's building from here. I mean, let's see what happens in the knockout round. Mexico's got a little bit of an eye-opener in the quarterfinal with Costa Rica, a team they didn't expect to be seeing at this
stage. No, because Haiti won that group. Mm-hmm. That's an incredible story, by the way, for Haiti. Martinique has provided some good moments. The Gold Cup.
Canada has been really good.
Absolutely. And Canada, by the way, Toronto has three players playing for Canada. Mm-hmm. So there'll be three of the five Toronto players out tomorrow due to international duty. Ashton Morgan is one of them, who we saw a lot in Atlanta for TFC a couple weeks ago. But it's been an interesting tournament because, for example, I watched the Cuba match in Denver that preceded the Mexico match last Thursday, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Who were they? It might have been against Martinique. I don't even remember. And it was... It was. Dreadful match.
Yeah.
Dreadful. So you still have a real gap between USA, Mexico, I'll even throw Costa Rica, even though they didn't win their group. Mm-hmm. The powers of CONCACAF... In the second group, there's still an enormous gap, but that's the hex. I mean, know that.
I think you've got three groups, honestly, when I look at CONCACAF. You've got U.S., Mexico, Costa Rica, Panama, Honduras have been right there. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a next tier with, if you pull Costa Rica, Panama, or Honduras down, I think Canada solidly in that second group now. Haiti, I think, is in that second group. Jamaica can be in that second group. But then there's a big drop. And then you're talking about, I mean, Martinique, and you've got some countries at play in the Gold Cup that can't participate in World Cup qualifying. But you've also got, you know, Bermuda, for example. I mean, Bermuda gets their first win ever in Gold Cup history last night. That's huge for them, but they haven't been anywhere near qualifying for a World Cup probably since the 60s or 70s when very few teams were taking it seriously. There's a huge gap. You have to have a 16-team tournament to bridge that gap. Like, Bermuda doesn't get any better if they're not getting in these games.
Of course.
But you're going to have some bumpy games from time to time in this tournament, just like we've seen in the women's tournament as well, since expanded.
Crowds have been good. Really good crowd in Charlotte the other night for Mexico.
Yeah, about 60,000.
Pretty good crowd in Cleveland for USA Trinidad. Really good crowd in Minnesota for USA Guyana. Not surprising.
Yeah.
So the crowds have been good, and the tournament will continue. In Copa America, Venezuela got out of group. So good for Joseph Martinez. Not so good for Atlanta United, because it means Joseph will certainly not be back for this weekend and maybe beyond. But now they have to play Argentina.
Yep. Got a win over them recently.
It's kind of interesting all of a sudden that could this maybe, because if they get past Argentina, their path to the final becomes,
well, they probably will see Brazil
in the semifinal. Yeah. But they would at least be in the last four. Yeah. They would play
that
for
would
third
be huge.
Place.
To get to a semifinal of Copa America is massive for Venezuela. Yeah. Just absolutely massive. I mean, I really do feel like this is a team that can qualify for the World Cup.
Yeah.
They've never qualified. They're the only South American country to not qualify. This feels like the group that can do it, and this is the start of that process.
I know you've been watching Copa America quite a bit, too. It's been a good tournament.
It is. Unfortunate for Miguel Almirón's in Paraguay. I thought they played so well against Argentina, and they deserved, you know, the 3 points in that one. And that Vieira call, but Miggy put on the Jets, and you know, now he's being linked.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment. Now, Newcastle, their manager is out, reportedly.
Do we have to talk about who was actually linked to the Newcastle job yesterday?
Anthony, don't tell me Alan Pardew.
No, he was linked, and that one's fine. He's fine.
Anthony Hudson?
Anthony Hudson.
Yes.
To Newcastle.
In the
Premier League.
You might as well relegate them now.
That happened. It happened.
Well, then.
Yeah, that happened.
Oh, Miggy. Jeez. Let's say that doesn't happen. But there is this report now. And look, these reports come out all the time. £50 million perhaps being thrown out there by Real Madrid for Miguel Almirón. Do you believe it?
Seems a little high. Seems a little fast, too. If he goes into the semifinal and scores a goal or has another play like that against Brazil, then maybe we're talking. But
yeah.
Is he on the radar? Yeah, I would say so. I would think he's on the radar of a lot of teams right now. But, you know, and Newcastle, if they get the right offer, they would sell him. $50 million, that's doubling what we were talking about before on what he was purchased for. That's fast. That's really fast.
Well, I know that you guys and Kelly talked a little bit last week about U.S. Open Cup, so no sense in really going over that again. But let's get you up to date where Atlanta United is heading into tomorrow's match against Toronto, and we'll dedicate the rest of the show to that match and Atlanta United club issues, so keep typing your questions in on the bottom of your screen. So, Toronto's going to be shorthanded tomorrow. We knew that. They have five players out on international duty. Aro sounds like he's not going to play with the hamstring. He's listed as questionable.
Didn't play Saturday.
Osorio has a hamstring.
Osorio's with Canada.
Mavinga has the hamstring, excuse me.
Didn't play Saturday.
So Toronto could be without as many as four players who have started 10 matches or more for them this year, and that does not include Jose Altidore, who's been in and out due to
Alex
injury.
Bono could be out. He missed the match on Saturday with the knock in training.
It's funny. By the way, I don't know if you noticed, and this is a very little thing, but this is just stuff that drives me nuts. Quentin Westberg was named to the MLS Team of the Week bench this week after giving up 3 goals to Dallas. I know he made 9 saves.
Yeah, I was about to say, the sad thing is
I know
he
made 9 saves,
it.
but I don't. I mean, I know there weren't a lot of matches, but to give up 3 goals and make the Team of the Week bench.
That game could have been way out of hand if Quentin Westberg hadn't had the night it did.
But I know there are some Atlanta United fans who are pretty bloodthirsty because Toronto got drilled on Saturday. They're shorthanded. But now here's Atlanta United. And you look at the list of their players who were out. We already knew Joseph and Franco Escobar. Tino Villalba sounds like he's not close.
No, he's still a
And now we find out that Barco took a knock in the Columbus match, and he's going to miss 2 weeks. That doesn't sound bad. That's 4 games. Mm-hmm. On top of that, you still don't have Kratz and Bello. So, you know, Andy Bunker said on the radio when we were talking about it earlier, it's going to feel like a U.S. Open Cup game tomorrow. I don't agree with that. I think Atlanta United still has plenty of firepower. Mm-hmm. You'll have Pitti. You'll have Gressel. You'll obviously have Nagby, Rometty, Larenowitz. Parkhurst, I would assume, at right back, LGP Miles, all that. However, I don't think anyone should expect Atlanta United to just be able to roll the ball out tomorrow night in Toronto and get a result.
I think we can bury the feel like an Open Cup match type of trope.
Which, by the way, Atlanta United played first choice in the Open Cup.
100%.
So. Maybe it is going to be like an Open Cup.
Yeah, it was the first choice group with the exception of Joseph and Gressel, who was out injured. Right. That was it. So Vasquez will start up top, and he's in great form. So
Frank DeBoer has essentially confirmed that, by the way. Yeah. That's not speculation.
Yeah.
What would be curious is if Romario Williams can get into the 18 or if he's still hurt.
He'll be in the 18.
He's not on the injury report.
He was in the 18 for Columbus, so I think he'll be in the 18 here. The question is who starts for Barco, and does Merrim keep his spot? Does Gressel come into the middle and replace Barco with Pitti out on the right? Does Pitti come inside? Gressel go to the right? Does Andrew Carlton get the start after a good performance? Does Pereira come back into the lineup? That's going to be the question. I kind of think keep Merrim in the team. I think Merrim's played well over these last 2 games. I think Merrim and Vasquez have a good connection. Keep rolling with that. Pitti out on the right. I don't want to mess with that. I like that. Even with Franco out, I still like that. And play Gressel in the middle.
We're going to get on the whiteboard in a moment. I nearly forgot, by the way, John Gallagher loan to Aberdeen for the rest of the year. They're about to start Europa League qualifying. That's a great move for all parties.
Yeah,
it's great for Aberdeen.
Situation.
It's awesome for John Gallagher. Numbers game just doesn't work out for John Gallagher to play too much right now, and I think Michael Parker showing that he's been more than capable to play right back is a big reason why.
Well, Gallagher needs to play, so I don't even know if it's the Parker stability at this point playing some right back, because Franco Escobar is one of the best right backs in the league. Mm-hmm. And if that wasn't the case, Gallagher would have played in MLS by now. I think it's honestly just Escobar is that good. And Derek Ray, who's been calling games in the Women's World Cup, Aberdeen supporter, follows the Scottish game significantly. He reached out to kind of get a little bit of that idea. And I was going back and forth with some Aberdeen fans. It sounds like there's going to be a good opportunity for Gallagher to play.
That's great.
It's not just going over there to make up the numbers. He's going to go play, and he can probably play some right back and some right wing, depending on what they need at a given time. But he'll get an opportunity. It's good for him because he's done as much as he can do here and at the USL Championship level. He needs more than that. There's nowhere for him to play right now.
Now, I know what you're all saying. Well, that's going to open up some spots for the transfer window, and that is technically true, but from a salary standpoint, your options are incredibly limited now.
It changes it just a little bit from what releasing Anderson Asayadu did. You have a little bit more money because it's a supplemental roster spot instead of a reserve roster spot. It's not even 100% confirmed that he's going to be off of the roster with the loan, because some of that comes down to salary and who's paying what and where it's going. If he is, you can do a senior minimum salary instead of a reserve minimum salary.
Yeah.
And you're not limited by age. That's about it. That's not a significant addition you would be looking to add in that piece.
So Atlanta United, I hate to break it to you, Paul Pogba is not going to be sold to Atlanta United in the upcoming
season. That happens. There's a lot of other moves going first. A lot of other things happen.
He
said he needed a new challenge, so
yes.
Listen, though, what did I tell you when Atlanta United signed Florentin Pogba? It's not ever going to be a bad thing to see Paul Pogba on social media supporting Atlanta United, wearing an Atlanta United shirt.
I wonder how many shirts were sold after that.
Probably a few.
Probably a few internationally.
Yeah, just a few.
And now, as it turns out, Florentin Pogba has turned into a very, very important player for Atlanta United and has played very well.
An important part of the club, too.
Yeah.
I thought what Frank DeBoer said yesterday was really interesting, that Florentin Pogba said, I want to go play with the twos in Indy. I want to go and be part of that group. That's significant, because not every international player in that situation, he could have said no. He could have said, look, I'm going to be in the 18 more than likely on Wednesday. I don't need to make that trip. I don't need to go play for the twos in that game. But he wanted to do it. And you can tell. I mean, go follow him on Instagram, because his videos are hilarious.
Yeah.
But he's a big part of that group, as a figure in the group. whether it's the twos or the first team. That's great when you can add a player like that that is comfortable with their role. He's not demanding more playing time. He's not demanding to start over anybody. When called upon, he's doing the job.
Yeah.
And he's comfortable doing whatever job he's called upon to do.
100%. He's been very good when called upon. All right, let's go to the whiteboard, talk a little bit about Toronto. Now, just remember, when these teams play back on May 8th, I think it was, I think Atlanta United, one of their better performances of the year, and that was right after they played on a Sunday night in Kansas City. They shut down Toronto, beat them 2-0, very comprehensive victory. Now you're pulling Michael Bradley out. Pozuelo only played 45 minutes for some reason on Saturday.
He'll start here. He came back late. Pozuelo's played, I think, since the start of the 18-19 season in Europe. He's played 46 or 48 games.
Yeah.
So they gave him a longer break during the break. They said, come back on Wednesday. You're not going to start in Dallas. That was already pre-planned. Mm-hmm. Probably will start tomorrow.
Weather looks good. Really good, as a matter of fact. Beautiful night. So let's go to the whiteboard and talk a little bit about Toronto's potential shape.
So Toronto against Dallas started with a shape we've seen them play a lot. They started in a 3-5-2. And so much of that 3-5-2 is keyed by their wingbacks, Justin Morrow especially on the left. Now, one thing that struck me is Liam Fraser was playing the Michael Bradley role, and he was really by himself for the most part, although the two central midfielders did sit a little deeper than normal, and then you have your two forwards. All right. The thing about it is this. One of the forwards was Nick DeLeon. Mm-hmm. Nick DeLeon has generally in his career played as a right back or a right winger, not really as a second forward. He's a great, hard-working player. He'll put in a shift for you. He's not a forward, so you didn't have a lot of support for Terrence Boyd. You had Jay Chapman, who was trying to play the Pozuelo role and create, wasn't comfortable doing it. Most everything came backwards. He didn't want to deliver the killer pass. Marky Delgado was having to do everything in the midfield because Liam Fraser was struggling a little bit. Fraser is a big body as a defensive midfielder. He doesn't have the passing ability of Michael Bradley, although he can pick a pass from time to time. He's not Bradley. So what happened is you weren't really winning the field anywhere. So it turned into much more of a 5-3-2, and even at times it looked more like your midfielders were sitting deep. You weren't getting anything going in the first half. Toronto just was pretty dreadful. So at the half, they make the change. Pozuelo comes in. You pull a center back. So you go to more of your standard shape of the 4-3-3. More 4-2-3-1, whatever you want to call it, or 4-1-4-1 in this case. They got torched in the second half. Because the problem is, when you have three back here, when you have three and your three were Drew Moore, who's been battling injury for the last 2.5 years, it feels like, Laurent Simon, who's in his 30s, and Eric Zavaleta, you have no pace.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay when you have three because generally you're going to have somebody who's going to drop a little more in cover. When you go to two, and if it's Moore and Simon, you're torched in the middle. You can't run with anybody. And if you're not winning this part of the field, and they weren't, you're in big, big trouble. They could have given up 4 or 5 goals in the second half.
They were outshot, what, like 27-6?
Yeah.
I want to say a really ugly number.
I think they're going to play essentially 5-3-2, even at home, because they don't have the numbers right now to really do much else. Now, how do you make it work a little more effectively? I think you get Nick DeLeon over here. I think you get Justin Morrow here. You play Pozuelo as a second forward, so at times it can kind of turn into a midfield diamond with three behind. Your flank players have to make your decisions. Both of them can run all day, so they can flip it and give you numerical superiority when you need it, but they can drop and defend as outside backs, which they'll probably have to do a good bit. I think that's going to be the way for them to be successful. If they play two center backs and it's more Simon, or even more, or Simon with Zavaleta, run all day at them.
Mm-hmm.
And even Vasquez, who's not as fast as Joseph Martinez, Vasquez can outrun them, and you can get in behind consistently. That's going to be the question when we talk Atlanta United's lineup. Okay, you are missing some pieces, but how do you exploit what you saw on Saturday?
And that's why I'm wondering if Pereira might be the choice over Miram, just because he is a little bit faster.
Could be. I mean, you could if you wanted to go that way and really go speed, I would be tempted to play Pitti as the 10 in this case, and play Pereira and Merrim on either side and try to get in behind.
What do you do with Gressel?
Maybe Gressel plays as the 8, and you could then rotate Nagby or Rometty out if you need to do it. You have options, and let's be real, you've got 9 games over the next month.
Yes.
From June 26th to July 26th, you're not going to see the same 11 game after game after game. I just don't think so.
Well, and if you beat St. Louis, 9 games becomes... I think it'd be,
another one after
it'd be
that.
12 in like 33 days or something like that. Yeah. Something crazy. So we're going to have that tomorrow night on 92.9 The Game. Now, remember, it's an unusual kickoff time, 8 p.m., so we'll be on the air with Five Stripes Countdown at 7:30. We know we have some more questions now about Atlanta United, and let's get to that now, brought to you by Country Financial. Don't get overwhelmed. Get started at TankSimpleSteps.com.
First, I want you guys to touch on this. Jason Stein, he loves Pitti, but he wants him to commit to Atlanta United. He says he lives in the past on Twitter and Facebook with River.
Stop. Like, stop. Tito does the same. Franco does the same about San Lorenzo. Franco does it about Newell's Old Boys. Tito does it about San Lorenzo.
And about Tata Martino, apparently.
Everybody. I mean, but that's part of it. Like, look, guys, you don't understand how these clubs are because Atlanta United's 2.5 years old. You don't understand what it's like to represent River Plate and have the year that Pitti Martinez just had at River Plate. It's not a situation where they're not committed to Atlanta United. I don't buy that at all. It's a different mentality completely.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing as, you want a comparison? Because it's not something that you can choose to go back to. But how many times do you see NFL, NBA players repping their college? And big time talking 100%. About their college. All the time.
It's part of your upbringing.
Right. That's what this is.
You know what, though, Jason, Jimmy? I mean, you guys really shouldn't root for UGA anymore. I'm going to renounce Penn State because you know what? I'm living in the past.
Yeah.
You know, it's just all Atlanta United all the time for me now. These guys are human. Relax.
It's not where you're not fully committed. That's the part that frustrates me because that's not fair.
By the way, how many minutes did Pitti play in 2 U.S. Open Cup matches during this international break?
How many minutes does Zlatan Ibrahimovic play in the Open Cup?
How many minutes does Zlatan play on turf?
Well, he played in Cincinnati halfway. I mean, he was there, but then he got mad, and you're getting teammates calling him out.
Yeah.
I'll take Pitti every single day.
Yeah, me too.
All right, let's see.
Thank you for the question, though.
Yeah, Kevin on Facebook says it's pretty clear that Vasquez will be starting in place of Joseph. But
Vasquez, by the way, I know that was controversial during the Charleston match. It's Vasquez.
But that's a thing, I've been reading some crazy takes on Twitter about pronunciations and how, like, it has to be one way every time, every person around the world.
No, it doesn't.
It's a very English sort of thing to say the Q-U in that way.
Yeah.
That's where I've generally heard it.
Yeah.
Is it 100% correct? No. I don't say it, but I'm used to saying, you know, Vasquez.
The club also told us that's how they would prefer it. It's the same thing with Villalba, Villalba. I mean, we were saying Villalba for a long time. The club went to us and said we would prefer it's pronounced Villalba.
That one's even more complicated
when
you get into dialects and specific ways to say things.
But people were hammering those Open Cup announcers. And, hey, you know...
It's not...
Hey.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother story.
Hey!
It's not 100% wrong. I think sometimes we get really bent out of shape to the point that I saw somebody going at Ariana Hengst yesterday for saying the H to a degree in Hermoso.
Oh,
and it's like, I think she came back and said, I'm a poor speaking German or something. I'm sorry. It's just dumb. Like, everybody has their own ways of saying things.
It's taking a little bit of a swipe at the broadcast arrangement for U.S. Open Cup, which I'm still not over, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, continue. No, I know.
Kevin was asking, do you see Pitti sliding in for where Barco is and putting Gressel out wide?
You could. That's the thing is, I think there's so many different possibilities. And
that might even change in the midst of the game, as we've seen a couple times this year. So.
I like Pitti on the right, I think, the most. I like Pitti on the left more than him in the middle. but against the right opponent, yeah. I mean, Pitti and Liam Fraser, I like that matchup. Mm-hmm. I like Pitti running at him, so maybe that's what you want to exploit in this one.
Alan Kelly, the referee, by the way, tomorrow.
Excellent
so
referee.
Excellent ref. You know, as we've said numerous times, Pitti has had trouble getting calls this year. I feel like that might be starting to tip just a little bit, but you got a very good referee. Mm-hmm. MLS Cup referee, Alan Kelly, tomorrow.
I hope it's tipping. Ask Barco if it's tipping.
That's true. Yeah, good point. Sad how Barco has to go to the U-20 World Cup to get calls.
Then he runs into Ismail Elfath there and he doesn't get called.
Right. another pro ref.
He's like, oh, no, it's you. I remember you.
See, Tom Russo says, can somebody at least break out a ruler or straight edge to make those lines on the whiteboard?
Hey, it was really fast. Look, here's the deal. All right, behind the fourth wall. I had two cars cut me off in the parking lot downstairs. I got in here 90 seconds before we went on the air and drew that up after I sat down. So you know, I'm just glad I'm here.
The iPhone has a level. And, I mean, right here, only minus 3.
I mean, it's wobbly.
I mean, it's not that bad. I mean, right here, the 6-yard box?
Yeah, I thought I nailed that.
That's right there, right?
I actually felt like I did okay. Now, the circle's
like here. This might be. That's not so great, but I don't know. I mean, Tom, you used to work here. You know our production budget. I mean, we do our best.
Let's see.
I had two cars cut me off. Yeah. Like just take two parking
spots.
It's almost
Thunderdome
right
in the Colony Square parking deck for Jason today.
We have one on Twitter. Coach Steve is wondering what y'all think about Barrett Salee on Twitter's. Trolling of 29.
It's unfortunate. I thought the first one was just an oversight. He obviously got a lot of feedback on it.
I don't give him that. I think it was intentional. The second one was incredibly intentional.
Yeah. Listen, this happened last year with another reporter in town, and I thought you said it best. Ignore Atlanta United at your own peril. If that's what Barrett wants to do, let him know about it. I would also be very careful. And this is something I brought up last year with the other reporter. I think you have to be very careful to get out of your defensive mindset a little bit. You know, we don't get to decide as soccer fans that everyone should think of soccer the same way that we do. We don't get to make that decision. That's a personal decision. And if you want to alienate people from trying to learn the game and love the game, don't get into that behavior of going way over the top and condemning someone who made a series of tweets like that. Do I think he was trolling in this case? Yes,
yeah,
absolutely. And that's unfortunate. I think Barrett's better than that. I don't know why he's doing it. But I think you should be very, very careful about how you respond to things like that. Because the last thing you want is something embarrassing to occur, and then Barrett can point and say, look at that soccer fan. Let's not have that.
It's kind of a setup, in my opinion, and that's why I'm basically just sit back and let it go, because it's a setup to get people to yell and scream and stomp their feet.
Yeah,
Barrett knows that there was a championship that happened here in December, just like the people, and somebody who has worked prominently for a network that has covered soccer and has made basically his living covering soccer said that Toronto hadn't had a championship since the Blue Jays in 93, and blew my mind, and argued with people that no, it didn't matter when Toronto FC won.
You know what's
incorrect?
You know what's funny about that case, and also the case here in Atlanta, and this is something we said in December. If you think this is not a big deal with Atlanta United, why don't you ask the owner of the Atlanta Falcons?
Mm-hmm.
Why don't you ask the owner of the Toronto Raptors about what he feels about Toronto FC's championship from 2 years ago? Oh, spoiler, he owns Toronto FC. Okay.
You know.
So, we got to get out of that mindset, too.
People have got to be better. And is it correct what he did and said? No. It's completely incorrect. And it is trolling. And I do agree. He's better than that. He's a great college football writer.
Yeah.
And I don't know why he felt like he needed this attention to do this. But it doesn't do anything to yell at him.
No.
It doesn't change anything.
Let's be better than that. Because quite frankly, I feel like we should be more secure in our feelings of where soccer is.
I'm not in any way worried about soccer going anywhere in this country.
Even on a micro scale, soccer in Atlanta is absolutely on the same platform right now as Braves, Hawks, Falcons.
Soccer in Atlanta and soccer in the United States has a more promising trajectory over the next 30, 40 years than college football, flat out. Over the long term, yes, there's a lot of growth room for it, and there's going to be issues over time with college football as participation numbers go down, all that. Is it going away? No. It's not going away. Is the NFL going away? No. Is soccer and MLS going to be a bigger deal? Yes, it is. So ignore it at your own peril.
I just had the correct.
There's more potential. There's more growth potential for soccer. There's more room to grow.
There's more growth potential, but do you think soccer can get to or surpass the level of interest of college football in our lifetime?
In our lifetime, maybe not, unless college football comes back.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think soccer is going to grow to that point just yet.
If you want to bring up baseball, I think yes. Then we absolutely could add that discussion.
Baseball, yes. And I think the NHL, we've had it. Like, it's regional. It's kind of at a different level. College football in the South, no. Not in our lifetime.
Not in our lifetime.
But are you going to see movement both ways to get closer? Yes, you will.
By the way, talk to the kids in Gainesville. Talk to the kids up in Dalton, in Whitfield County, the kids that were supporting those high school playoff teams in soccer, the way they would support a high school football team. Barrett might want to check that
more
out
than they would support the high school football team. That's what's starting to flip in a lot of communities is that, and that's where I see that change is Pop Warner level kids are playing soccer instead of Pop Warner football. They're playing a lot more than Little League Baseball. That goes up to high school. Then now you're having middle school start soccer programs, okay? You used to really only have middle school football and basketball. Now you're having soccer teams in the mix too. High school, you're going to have small high schools that are going to cut football.
Yeah.
It's going to happen over time, and you're going to have communities where high school football draws a few hundred people and soccer is drawing bigger crowds.
Yeah.
It's happening.
And I also believe that if the USA wins a World Cup in our lifetime, then all bets are off as far as the trajectory of soccer.
The USA hosting the World Cup in 2026 is going to light a rocket underneath it. And if U.S. soccer does the right thing and goes out and does whatever it takes to get the Women's World Cup in 2027.
And y'all, the Olympics in 2028.
That is it. That is when it blows up.
All right, let's take one more question so we can reset our cue card. And then we'll call it a day.
Jason Stein has, how do you see the St. Louis game for the U.S. Open Cup? Do you think we'll go full throttle now to win the Open Cup?
I think you go full throttle for sure. What full throttle is at that stage is really hard to predict with the situation right now with all the schedule. And St. Louis will 100% go full throttle. Yes. That's the biggest thing they have left on their calendar. So what does it look like for Atlanta? We'll have to see because you've got at Toronto, back home for Montreal, at Chicago, back home for Red Bulls before you get to that game. Then you go to Seattle a few days later.
Yeah, and then you come back, you play Houston on a Wednesday, and then you have, I forget what you have after that, but then right after that, you go to LAFC. And then
DC
at home leads the conference. LAFC on the road. Then potentially the Open Cup semifinal, which could be against Orlando, could also be against New York City. Yeah, could be nuts.
You got Philadelphia coming up right after that.
Philadelphia's on Labor Day weekend. Portland, who you know will be
that's in August.
Bloodthirsty for that one at Providence Park. So
the good thing this time though is everybody's got this kind of schedule.
Yes,
everybody's dealing with it. I think Atlanta is better positioned than maybe anybody. Including LAFC, because I don't think LAFC's got the depth that Atlanta does.
But I would also say that's why a match against Toronto, a match against Montreal, a match against Chicago, very, very important matches.
Start hot.
Because you got to not only do you have to start hot, but looking at it realistically, you can't expect to be getting 3 points a night when you look ahead and see Red Bulls and LAFC and Seattle on the road and Houston. Houston's starting to fade a little bit, but still have to take them seriously. So when you have winnable situations like you do tomorrow night, you have to capitalize.
What we talked about last week was averaging 2 points per game in the eight games over this next month. If you get 3 points in Toronto, which you absolutely can with the people they're missing and the way they're playing right now, 3 points against Montreal here, which you can get. They're very inconsistent. They're not as good on the road. 3 points in Chicago will be more challenging, but that is definitely 3 points you feel like you can get. You get 9 points in the first three games. you're playing with house money.
Yes, you are.
And you have tough opponents coming, but you can easily get to that 2 points per game. And 2 points per game is kind of that magical number where you're having a season for the ages.
And then you got those matches then coming at home, a bunch of matches at home.
And that's so, the big thing. Like you do have a lot of those tough matches.
You feel like you should win at home.
Yeah, good points. Okay, tomorrow night, 7:35 Stripes Countdown on 92.9 The Game and 8 o'clock the kickoff from BMO Field. Jason and I will get on the plane tomorrow morning. And, Andy Bunker brought up a good point. I think we're actually going to have time tomorrow to walk around Toronto and enjoy it a little bit.
Nice.
Because the last time we were in Toronto, Jason got there about 5 minutes before kickoff. I got there a little earlier, and the weather sucked. So hopefully it'll be a lot better tomorrow.
The game
was a reflection of the day that we had. So we'll talk to you tomorrow at 7:30. And, again, stoppage time next Tuesday again because we're going to Chicago next Wednesday. So next Tuesday at 2 o'clock for a next edition of Stoppage Time brought to you by Aaron's. Easy, beautiful, affordable top brands in furniture, electronics, and appliances. Your credit isn't the best. That's fine. Shop Aaron's.com or one of 47 Atlanta stores. And I want to thank Meta for resetting the cue card.
Yes.
Otherwise, I would have been doing this. So for Jason and Jimmy, I'm Mike. We'll see you next week on Stoppage Time.